Welcome to Hungry in Nashville. May I take your order?
On today's menu are turkeys. It would be the time of year that every turkey would dread, except they're not really bright enough to realize it. In this episode, we'll talk about how smart turkeys are, whether they can fly, whether they sleep in trees, and whether they try to mate with ducks. Now it's time to meet our guest.
My name is Karen Overton. I am a fourth-generation farmer at Wedge Oak Farm, which is a century farm in Lebanon, Tennessee. And I raise pastured poultry, pastured pork, and a variety of livestock that we do our best to raise in ethical and sustainable ways.
When Karen decided to work on the family farm, she was an archaeologist working in New York City. When land developers encountered something that might be of historical value, it was her job to decide whether it was of value and, if so, what to do with it. Then one day she was packed in a subway, getting far too close to her fellow riders than she wanted to be, and she decided she needed to make a change. At the same time, her parents were unsure of what to do with the land in rural Lebanon that hadn't been farmed since the 1980s. She moved back and began researching how to raise organic vegetables. And she grew a lot of vegetables, but the market was crowded, and it was difficult to sell them. She knew she wanted to create a sustainable place and make enough money to live on, and that led her to learn about animal husbandry. After hitting the books to learn all she could, she began raising animals. She gave the animals plenty of space, and if they needed to be moved, she moved them as families.
So, as for their entire lives, until they slowly, you know, one by one or two by two or how many ever I take to process, go to process. So we try to really keep them moving around a bit. The hogs I'm using a lot to clear out back. The place wasn't farmed, so, or kind of cared for a long time. And so there's a lot of kind of renegotiating with the thistles and the catbriars and all of those things. So I have been trying to kind of reclaim that for the past 10 years, open pastures back up and utilizing the livestock to do that, and then also utilizing what they offer back to the soil and to the forest and all of that.
Then there were other things she had to learn. For example, skunks. Something was killing her birds, and she set a live trap to find out what it was. When the trap was sprung, there was a skunk inside, and that posed an obvious problem.
So anyway, I read and found you could take a tarp or a cover, and if you would walk very slowly and you could cover them, that they won't spray in the dark. So anyway, I tarped it and I carried it over and put it in the bed of my truck, and I drove it down to a release area. I don't know if I should tell where. And I drove it, and it's part of my relocation program. That was the first animal involved. I've caught many animals since then, including snakes and raccoons, possums. But I'm a firm believer in the release the nuisance animal far away out of its territory.
Eventually, the animals have to make the trip to a processor where they're killed and prepared for sale. It's not an easy thing to watch, but Karen believes it's something she needs to supervise to make sure her animals are treated well and with respect. There are also times when she works on the line at the processor, trimming out giblets so she won't have to pay the processor for the extra labor. For the turkeys, getting them to the processor is relatively easy. They like Karen and willingly follow her into the truck, where, the next day, they're processed. In the meantime, the turkeys spend the evening in the truck with plenty of food and water. As I mentioned before, turkeys aren't the only animals she raises. Among her other animals are pigs, and for some reason, people like to have their pictures taken with pigs.
I've actually had a bachelorette party that came out back during the summer. I got this call that the bride-to-be is a huge hog fanatic, and these women were coming to Nashville to do the big, you know, downtown bachelorette madness. That's what I see it as. But they wanted to come here first and pet pigs, and so we did. We walked over and we petted those pigs, and you know, they paid me a little bit for a farm visit, so I felt like those hogs have got another year because they have earned their keep with the bachelorette party.
By the way, every time you heard bachelorette earlier, substitute bridesmaids. It was just a miscommunication. When we're back, we're going to start talking turkey. Yeah, turkeys aren't that bright. I can kind of imagine the pigs rolling in their slop, gossiping about how dumb the turkeys are.
Turkeys have a real tendency to hurt themselves until they get about a foot tall. And at a foot tall, they're like a dinosaur that cannot be destroyed, cannot be taken down. And so, I mean, as young poults, I've found them upside down in a bucket of where it only had like 2 inches of water in it. And the turkey poult was dead, upside down in a bucket. You know, I hate to say they're stupid, but it really is perplexing when you find them having hurt themselves in the most peculiar ways. And they, you know, turkeys need a lot of space and they love to be outdoors. And so every day we would take these buckets of tomatoes, blemished tomatoes, and we would throw them and the turkeys would chase them like tennis balls, like a dog. And then they would pick, you know, try to pick one up and run with it.
And like dogs, some of them like to follow Karen around.
So this turkey started following the four-wheeler every morning. And so you would go out to feed all the different hog areas, take the grocery store cutoffs out, and this turkey would follow. And he was so funny. I mean, he would run and his whole body would just, you know, side to side, and he would just run behind the four-wheeler. And then when you'd get to an area, he'd just, you know, follow you around and talk to you. It was all fun and games, right? Until spring came and he didn't have any girlfriends. And so he became very aggressive with the image of himself, and which was always reflected in my mother's car. So he started attacking himself in her car. So anyway, he went to process with a batch of chickens, and I had this giant turkey that I made turkey jerky out of his breast. And anyway, we missed him.
Just like your distant cousin, turkeys may not be very smart, but they are personable and fun to have around.
I love the turkeys. It's really sad when they go. It's just sad. They are so personable. And if they see you, they all come running. And they've got this funny gait, you know. They've got this big old massive body on top of these two legs that are, you know, long. And when they run, it's just a really funny gait that they have. It's almost like a... people call it a chicken strut, but maybe it's a turkey strut. And we usually have one or two that we don't end up sending for one reason or another who stays for a while and becomes a pet, and usually until breeding season, and then the males always become a nuisance and start attacking, like, the car.
So turkeys will follow Karen around and chase tomatoes, but they also like shiny things.
One year, we had just gotten in the turkey poults, and they were day-old tiny little things, and they like shiny things when they're little. I mean, they always like shiny things. And I had a ring, and I was dangling the ring, and they all came over and were looking at it. And then one of them nabbed it and took off running with it. And I was like, oh my God, it's got my ring, you know, just like a dummy. So I don't tempt fate anymore with the turkeys and tempting them with things I don't want them to swallow that I might have to go look for later. So this turkey, I put him out at the barn, and in the morning, forgot him. I was going to, you know, put him in the morning. But when you're leaving at 4:30 in the morning, and you've got a 2-hour drive with a 14-foot trailer on the back of your truck. You know, you have a couple of things on your mind. Are my lights working? Have I had enough coffee? Do I have any more coffee? And so I left this turkey. So he just started living at the barn.
Hey, what about the ring?
I did get my ring back. I did. And I was very, of course, I promptly lost it. So, not promptly, I think a year later I lost it. But I did get it. And now it's in a hog area somewhere, never to be seen again.
Earlier in the program, I said we were going to talk about whether turkeys try to mate with ducks. To my knowledge, they don't. I didn't even ask the question. I just wanted you to stick around to find out. To make up for that, when we come back, we'll talk about whether turkeys can fly and if they sleep in trees.
Come on, let's turkey try.
Call it fly. It's kind of more of a jump and coast kind of thing, but they can get up pretty high. Their wings are strong, and it's one of the reasons that I really like just walking them into a trailer. I used to try to hand catch them, and they will, you know, knock you backwards with their wing. I mean, it feels like a good solid, you know, plant in the face. Like, so anyway, I just try not to handle them too much. I try to treat them like a larger animal, like one of my hogs or something. And they are easily, unlike chickens, they are very easy to herd. And, you know, they like to follow. Chickens, no, not a chance. Give it up. You're no luck. People say herding cats are bad, but that chickens, you can forget it.
Well, since they can fly, sort of, do they really sleep in trees?
They do sleep in trees. They like to sleep on the highest point. So I've got mine in a pasture right now with a turkey roost. I've got them behind a pretty big electric net that keeps predators out. They're too big for winged predation like hawks and owls at this point. And then I've got a livestock dog that stays out in the same pasture with them, where I have a couple of sets of birds out there of different. I've got meat chickens, I've got the turkeys, I've got a set of laying hens. So, but they do, they select a high spot, and that's where they like to be. So these turkeys like to stay together, and they're in a structure that's on skids that we pull with our tractor. Basically, inside it's just roosting poles, which are just trees that we've cut down from outside that are probably 4-inch diameter and are nailed on the inside of this roosting structure on skids. So the skids, you know, gets moved when it's not raining, which has been so seldom this fall and summer. So anyway, we pull it forward with the tractor, but they all like to get on the high spot. It'll be raining and I'll be going home at night and I'll drive down the driveway leaving the farm towards the front gate, and I'll look over and all the turkeys are trying to squish on the very pinnacle of the roost. So they're funny, but they do get in trees. Absolutely.
In researching the story, I came across something that I couldn't believe was true, so I had to ask. Do turkeys' heads really change color?
It's like a psychedelic show. I mean, if they're curious about something, or sometimes the males will get into a little pecking issue, and they talk to each other and kind of guff the ground, and it's just an act of dominance, I guess. But their heads will turn just these blues and purples and reds, and it's pretty wild. And then their snood, you know, the snood is the long dangly thing that comes off of the top of their beak, and those change colors too. I mean, they're so curious, they come up to you. You can touch them, and they do it on their own. I mean, it's just, I don't know, I guess somehow it's tied to their brain, and I guess when they feel any kind of excitement or, you know, whatnot, I guess that's what causes it. Because, I mean, they don't do it when they're asleep or sitting still or, you know, sunning or something. It's always when they're active and their curiosity has gotten them. So, yeah, I mean, if you go up to them, they automatically do that. I mean, you're causing it, but I think anything that stimulates their brain causes it.
One year, the weather didn't cooperate. Turkeys put on weight when the weather turns cold, and that year, it just didn't get cold. In order to fatten them, Karen gave them more food, and boy, did they like the extra food.
Alton Brown says that the best way to cook a turkey is to spatchcock it, cut it down the middle, and open it out, and then you can cook it, and you get a real consistent carcass. So I thought, well, I'll just have a bunch of those cut in half, and then people that want a 10 or 12 pound bird get this lovely 10 or 12 pound half instead. Oh no, it didn't work like that. People thought, a half turkey, no way. It wasn't whether or not they got jibs. I was like, you know, I can get you the neck and the, some people want that stuff and some people don't. You know, that some people want the heart and the liver and the gizzard and some people don't. So it took me, and now I have a couple of people that actually ask for the half turkey. But it was I had to do a hard sell on people to even think about doing a half turkey instead of a whole bird.
When it comes to Thanksgiving, people have very specific ideas about what they want. Karen raises turkeys in a variety of weights, and she does that by timing when they're sent to processing. Most of her birds are between 10 and 20 pounds.
People are really specific about their vision of their Thanksgiving table. And most people don't carve the bird at the table anymore. They have a really strong idea about whether they're going to make stuffing or dressing. And some people, if you assume one or the other, you are going to be so wrong. You never make assumptions about how anybody's going to do their Thanksgiving bird. I had this little old woman who came to pick up her 18-pound turkey that she had ordered. She had ordered an 18-pound turkey, and I had one. And when I handed it to her, she started shaking her head no and almost crying because she said it wasn't big enough. It wasn't going to be enough turkey. And it is so upsetting to me to have somebody come to your booth at the farmer's market who's paid a deposit for a bird and then be upset because it's not big enough. And I thought, well, I had some bigger birds, but I left them here. We bring extra ones to the farmer's market when we do our turkey delivery day. And so that people that just walk up can still buy a bird. But I left all the huge ones, you know, anything over 19, 20 pounds, I left it here. I exchanged the bird for her. I made a special trip to Nashville to give her a bigger bird. And because it was, you know, she could barely hold the thing. And you know, to see somebody not happy, and I thought, 18 pounds, that's pretty big, lady.
Hungry in Nashville is brought to you by Out of My Pocket Productions, and it's copyrighted 2018 by me, Jim Grinstead. You can listen to Hungry in Nashville on our website, hungryinnashville.com, on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. While you're on the website, click the menu item for blog, and you can subscribe to our blog. There are postings with additional information that go with each of our regular podcasts. We'll post other things there from time to time that you may find interesting. So thanks for listening, and may you eat well. Thank you.